Welcome to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by the very sick, in the bad way, Seth Mitchell. You surviving, Seth?
Barely. I'm barely hanging in there. I'm sick as a dog.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, hopefully you get through the podcast, and if you you see that Seth is muted or something, it's because he's having a coughing fit or something.
Yeah.
But we have plenty of news to talk about this week, as we always do, starting with Tesla. With the supercharger crisis, so that's a story that we broke last week, but right after the last podcast, so we didn't talk about it. And there was actually some updates throughout the week, so we're going to go through that. But starting with the fact that last Friday, Tesla implemented a 33% across-the-board price increase on the superchargers, like pay-per-use prices. And not only it's not only a price increase per kilowatt hour, but they also changed a little bit the structure. So we already knew that the structure is it's quite complex. It was quite complex already, based on the fact that some regulation in some regions, they don't allow you to sell electricity directly to consumer if you're not an electric utility. So in those places, they decided to charge a certain price per minute based on the actual charge rates, which was over or under 60 kilowatts. Other places were more simple, where throughout the whole state, whole region, whole country, the price was set per kilowatt hour. So that price went up 33% in all region. It went up to, on average, in New York, 31 cent per kilowatt hour. That was the average in the U.S. In places like New York, it went up for 24 cents per kilowatt hour to 32 cents per kilowatt hour in New York City itself. So what changed is that there are other places, especially like up north New York, where the electricity is cheaper. The price wouldn't be as expensive as New York City itself. So that's part of the change in the structure that Tesla implemented, which is now based on an actual specific charging station and not a whole region. The price should be pretty similar in the whole region, but they can change a little bit per station. And the only way to know exactly the price of a specific station is if you are in your car and you click on the supercharger, you see the supercharger car going up, and the price is going to be listed there.
So that definitely qualifies as drastic, I would say. But then something happened a little bit afterwards, and Tesla came down a little bit with their prices. Kind of rolled back, 10%-ish?
Yeah. So two or three days later, Tesla reached out to us and said that they listened to the customer feedback from it, and they reduced the price increase by 10%. So it's still a significant price increase, because like it's over 20% price increase. But they came back down a little bit because there was quite a backlash from consumers here. I think like just on our article alone, there was like a top, like 1,200 comments on that article about the price increase that we did. And we did mention that while it's still cheaper than gas, or well, at least most gas-powered cars in most region, like if you have a very efficient car in a place where the gas price is extremely low, then maybe it's not even competitive, but those are rare exceptions. If you compare it to other third-party charging stations like EVgo, in some places Tesla was not more expensive than EVgo, which was never the case before. So that put a little bit more pressure, I think, on Tesla, on top of all the customer feedback that they got, and they decided to decrease the price. Nothing very significant. If you go back to the national average, it's now back to 28 cents per kilowatt hour. So if you compare to the national average price of electricity per kilowatt hour, I think it's 16 in the US, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't write that in an article, but so
that sounds about right.
Yeah, so it's much more expensive, but you have to take account that that's not really what Tesla is paying all the time, because the charging stations, they can, for a long period of time, just not use any electricity at all. And then for a short period of time, they use a ton of electricity. Then they're getting charged with what they call demand charges, which just jacks up the price of the electricity significantly. So the average price then go up if you account for when the station sees low usage versus when they have very high usage.
Yeah, and you wonder when it makes sense to put in a like a power pack to kind of cut that demand charge down. We saw this week that we'll talk about later. Volkswagen has a new charging station with a battery built in, so to kind of like level off those demand charges a little bit.
Yeah, though for Volkswagen, they say that it's more about like flexible, rapid deployment of the charging station more than the controlling the cost. Though that's part of it too. I mean, Tesla's been doing it too. We've seen them deploy power packs at some supercharger in the UK.
Yeah, that's right.
If you go way back from when Elon Musk confirmed that the V3 supercharger was coming, that was in a tweet that I sent out like back in 2016, so like almost 3 years ago now. That was in reference to, I was asking when Tesla's going to deploy more power packs and solar power to supply supercharger station. And Elon said that it was coming with V3 supercharger, which is supposedly coming in the next few months. So maybe that's going to happen too. Some people noted that if you want to reduce costs, that's not the way to go, because you're just adding costs with adding superchargers and adding power packs and solar. And that's true, but you have to look at the cost over a longer period of time. And if you do, and with the demand chargers and with the increasing price of electricity, then it starts to make sense on the long term. Tesla is playing the long game here. It's not short term at all. Supercharger was never a short term play. It was a very long term play. All right, moving on to the Model 3. The European homologation is confirmed. So the Tesla is using the road authorities in the Netherlands to get their approval on when they launch a version of the vehicle in Europe. So the European version has some differences with a bunch of safety regulation, but main in terms of the powertrain, mainly have the charge parts and everything, which is of course using CCS now. So Tesla is now greenlighted to deliver cars to customers in Europe, and the timing is perfect because a bunch of reservation holders have been tracking the first cargo shipment that are coming to Europe. Right now, I think there's one coming to Zeebruges in Belgium that's going to serve most European market, but Tesla also ships directly to Norway, and I think there's another one going to Norway now, and people have been tracking them, and looks like they're about like a week away max at this point. So within the next week or two, you should definitely start seeing deliveries in Europe for Model 3s. Staying on the
Model, that's kind of right on schedule. I think they said, you know, February. And the beginning of February, and that's exactly when those things are coming in.
Yeah, I mean, the timing was prepared for a long time, because like Tesla knew that in the U.S. demand will just crash because of the federal tax credit phasing out. So that change of production to the European market has been in the planning for a long time. And yeah, they've been dedicating a lot of production to a European version of the cars now. Resale value for the Model 3, if that's something that you worry about, Kelley Blue Book, which is a company that do vehicle valuation and automotive research, they came out with their 2019 awards for the car that retained the value the most. And the Model 3 topped the electric vehicle category, even though it just came out a year ago. And Model X came in second too. So that's great news, but I think it comes with a grain of salt here. First of all, those are projections. So it's a 36 months, a 60 months projection. In the case of the Model 3, they predict that it holds 69.3% of the value over 36 months and 48.7% of the value over 60 months. Again, those are just projections based on very little data at this point, so I'll be careful. And also, like, I don't understand how they do even their projection, because after Model 3 and Model X, the one that came in the third place in the electric vehicle version is the Audi e-tron, which, like, there's no sale yet, like, at least not in the U.S. Just starting now in Europe. So, like, they have absolutely no data about it, and they still were able to put it in third place. I don't know what's that about. But I still think that the Model 2 is going to hold its value just fine, thanks to things like the over-the-air update, which always improves on the car. So when new features come in, it's not just for a new vehicle, it's for existing cars, so that's great. I mean, I haven't had any issues with my car in terms of like quality issue so far, but I haven't driven that much, to be honest. I think it has still less than 2,000 kilometers right now. So I'm not the best person here, but I think overall it's going to hold up just fine. I'm just not sure about that 69.3%.
Yeah, and one other thing to think about, Kelley Blue Book, it used to be a car rating service only, and I think a few years ago it got picked up by Cox, which is like the big cable and media conglomerate. So it's more like a magazine now. And they're not the same thing that they used to be. So when I think they were owned by Auto Trader in 2010, and then they moved on to the Cox. So Kelley Blue Book isn't what Kelley Blue Book used to be. It used to be an independent ratings thing, and now it's a media company.
Good point. Yeah, because you used to hear like that, like the Kelley Blue Book value was like golden. Bible. It was the gold standard. Yeah, you don't hear that as much anymore.
Nope.
Model S and X production most affected by the recent layoffs. So last week we reported on the layoffs that Elon Musk announced. I think it was the previous Friday. Now there's a report from CNBC citing ex-employees and current employees about the layoffs, and they give some color basically on which department which were most affected. And they said that pretty much all department was affected, but the Model S and X production teams were the most affected, which makes a lot of sense because Tesla just discontinued 75 kilowatt hour battery pack, which I think going to reduce the demand for the Model S and X significantly, so it would make sense that Tesla would cut the production. But the automaker did comment on the report saying that, they said what I just said about the 75 kilowatt pack, but they said it was to streamline production and you have even more differentiation for the Model 3. And because of those efficiency improvement in production line, they have reduced Model S and X production hours currently. So they never really confirmed that they reduced the production volume, just the production hours. I think that the fact that Tesla just didn't came out and say we didn't reduce the production volumes really much mean that they did, and which is not surprising at all since we knew that the 75 kilowatt hour pack went away. I maintain that my speculation is that Tesla is coming out with a new pack and now they are preparing that new architecture to come out. And that's why they stopped the 75 kilowatt hour pack production. Though I also heard that they're still making it like as an off the menu item. So I don't know if those are just about getting some existing stock away, or they are actually making some packs. But it's a strange situation to say the least.
Very strange. It kind of feels like they're doing something with Model S and X, like, you know, what we're expecting, the refresh, maybe to coincide with the version 3 supercharger. I don't think Tesla's going to let the Model S and X kind of languish. I think they probably have some new demand drivers in the pipeline. So, you know, for me, this is kind of like a temporary thing, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's definitely a temporary thing, but like, how temporary it is can have an impact on Tesla's Model S and X are still big vehicle programs that have an impact on Tesla earnings. Yeah, so
big margins there.
Yeah, so if it lasts more than a quarter, I start to be worried about. But I think the timing, I think something's going to happen this quarter with the Model X and X program. Might be one more thing at the Model Y event if that's still planned for March. I don't know. Still on the CNBC report, though, real quick, they also released some of the information about the Tesla severance package. So pretty standard stuff about like a 60 days of salary. And 60 days of salary, that's the standard. Then they have, if you sign an agreement, a severance agreement, you get a little bit more severance pay and an extended medical coverage. But you have to agree to a series of things about not talking about Tesla in the public forums or to the media or stuff like that.
Don't talk to CNBC.
Yeah, exactly. So I figured that that person that shared their severance package didn't sign it or anything.
No.
Was it me? Someone knocking?
I don't think so. I think it might be you.
All right. Well, let me just check real quick. Can you go about the Sentry mode?
Sure. Tesla is working on Sentry mode for 360 dash cam surveillance. And I have to say, like, I kind of feel like Elon stole my idea here. November, he said something like, please let me know what you would most like improved, fixed about your Tesla. Thanks. And I said, all cameras record in the event of alarm incident. Publicize this feature so prospective vandals, thieves know they will be recorded if they mess with Teslas. And as anybody who lives in San Francisco knows, this vandalism is a huge problem right now. That like back window where they knock out the back end and the alarm doesn't go off is kind of running rampant. We're getting, you know, 5-6 tips a day about that. So having the ability, and more importantly, having the reputation of having all cameras recording at all times would be kind of a nice feature to have sooner rather than later. And I'm sure that's probably some of the impetus for this project. Sentry mode, isn't that from like a comic or something? I can't remember. You'll have to forgive me on that one. But Musk clarified that it is part of safety and security, so you don't have to have autopilot. You don't have to have purchased autopilot. You just have to have AP2 or above hardware to get it, which is kind of good news for a lot of people. I imagine that it will require a lot more storage space on the USB stick that you have to stick into the car. At this point you're starting to look at like hard drives or 256 gigabyte SD cards. I guess those are pretty cheap nowadays, but you have to put a USB stick or a USB hard drive on your Tesla to see these kind of features. All right, we're done with Sentry. What do you think about the Sentry mode?
Sorry,
Sentry mode. Your thoughts?
They need it. Tesla cam right now is, as far as a dash cam goes, it's pretty handicapped. I think it's not a full product. It's incredible that Tesla was just able to release like something that would replace an actual hardware product just through a software update. But 360 coverage and a parking mode and all that, they need it for sure. Especially after all the break-in that we reported on like last week.
I was saying that.
Yeah.
It's getting kind of crazy. We're getting a few tips a day at least.
Mm. Yeah, people are upset by that. Yeah, so sorry about that, guys.
No problem. We're moving on to new self-driving autopilot hardware. Leaked or not leaked? Seeped?
Yeah. I got a source on that sent me the diagram basically that. So yeah, the context is important here. So what the story was about is that Tesla updated the wiring information for the Model 3 for all the service parts to now Autopilot 3.0 ECU, which is the new computer that we've been talking about for a while now. So a source sent me that, and the fact that it's in the service part as like a new standard part made us think that, oh, it's actually going into production now. We reached out to Tesla about that, and they said, no, it's not in production. So fair enough. But then we asked, why is it as a standard part in your service diagram for the wiring? And they said they couldn't know. So we reported that Tesla accidentally leaked the diagram in their service part wiring system.
And they love that.
Yeah, and then they were really upset about us saying that it was leaked in there, and they didn't want us to report on it, say that it was leaked, but yet they couldn't explain how it went out. So we ended up changing it to reveal. I'm like, all right, doesn't change anything for me anyway. It's still out there now. I mean, not much here, instead, except for we see that there's a secondary, primary, and a secondary radar now. So Tesla might be also adding a radar to the hardware 3.0 on top of the computer upgrade, which I think would make a lot of sense. Having a better understanding of what's coming behind the car, like I would assume that it would be a radar on the rear. What do you think? Because right now there's only one radar, it's a front-facing radar.
Yeah, I mean, that would be beneficial for sure.
Yeah, and, well, it's not my expertise, but I think it would make sense. And so we still don't have a perfect idea on the timing. Tesla, when we reported on it, Tesla just reiterated what Peter Bannon said last quarter, that it's coming at the end of Q1, which would mean by the end of March. And then what happened today is that we uncovered a series of patents that Tesla applied for regarding that computer. So, you have, to be honest, it's going over my head a lot. I mean, it's some very hardcore real engineering here that is pretty complex. So unless you're like you're very into like chip architectures or anything like that, I wouldn't go too much in detail yet, but we posted everything on Electrek if you guys want to check them out. And the inventors.
The comment section there is going to be good.
Coming in?
The comment section at the bottom. We'll have some engineers commenting on it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. There's already over 100 comments on it. And some people seem more knowledgeable than me on that stuff. And yeah, it's all Peter Bannon and his team. I mean, Peter Bannon is listed as an inventor on all those patents, and a bunch of the AMD engineers that they hired too. Like when we reported back then, you remember Jim Keller. They hired Jim Keller to start the AI chip architecture. Peter Bannon followed him quickly after, and then a bunch of the basically poached like half a dozen AMD chip architect, and those guys are still Keller is gone now, but Bannon is leading the team of engineers, and a bunch of them were also listed on as inventors on those patents.
Yeah.
Oh, a cool article that kind of went under the radar earlier this week, and was yesterday actually. I was kind of surprised by that because I think it's important. We have to thank our friend Keith Trice about that flagged the change to me. Tesla updated its trip planner, range prediction algorithm for the trip planner to use temperature data more effectively based on the elevation of this around a planned route. So Tesla was always using elevation, or at least for a long time. But Keith flagged to me a change in the user manual, the Model S, to add the fact that it's now using adveritable factor, the range prediction. So the range prediction, for those who don't know, it's when you enter a route on your navigation system in your Tesla, it will tell you what range, what percentage state of charge you're going to have at that destination. So and also is going to have charging sessions in between you and your destination if you need to. So that prediction is extremely important for you, because it's I use an example in my article where I used the supercharger in Magog, Quebec, and based on my current state of charge, it was telling me that I'd be there with 10% state of charge, which is not a lot, but it's enough. So technically, I arrive at the supercharger, and I'd still have 10%. I'd be able to supercharge and be on my way in a few minutes or whatever I need to get to my next destination. The thing is, as an experienced Tesla driver, and the way I drive and everything, I know that I'm not going to have 10% when I arrive there. Normally, I account for another 10% state of charge if I want to drive normally. If I want to reduce my speed a lot and everything, then yeah, sure, I could make it with that range prediction. But that's never the case, basically. So normally what I would do, I would forget what the car is telling me. I would wait to charge a little bit longer to get there until it shows like 20% or something, or 15%. And then I'll set out on my trip.
Yeah, we don't leave when we're on a trip, we don't leave without at least 20% buffer for when we get there.
Yeah, that's generally a good rule. So if automakers can make that prediction more precise and makes more sense with the driver's driving style and the environmental conditions, that's a great advantage for range anxiety. So you don't need to do that mental calculation that we just did to think about that 20% buffer that Seth just mentioned, to just look at the car telling you and be confident that what the car is telling you is right. So that basically eliminates range anxiety. It's just not there yet. I haven't seen, I think Tesla is leading the way here, but I haven't seen anyone that's doing fine, that doing perfectly at all, Tesla included. I mean, when we tested the I-Pace a few weeks back, you get inside the car and the car is telling you 280 miles of range. You're like, get out of there. It's not 280 miles of range. So
the Chevy Bolt is the exact opposite, though.
Bolt is better on that, yeah.
And in the cold, it'll tell you you have like half the rated range, like 120 miles of range. And that's, you know, if you're pumping the heat and it's like super cold, like, you know, negative Fahrenheit, it'll tell you you have 120 miles, which is about half of the 240 rated range.
Yeah.
And to be fair, it's pretty accurate. I drive pretty hard, but, you know.
Yeah, it also takes into account your driving style. You drive your Bolt very hard?
What was that?
You drive your Bolt very hard, you said?
Yeah. I mean, you took it on the autocross, right?
Yeah. It's a fun car on the autocross.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's me every day.
All right. So what changed basically is now Tesla says that with the latest update to the system, they use the elevation around the route and they have an algorithm that predict the temperature changes around the route based on those elevations. So it's not perfect temperature prediction, but elevation is a pretty good indicator of the temperature changes. So using that, they think that it's more precise, especially in cold weather where the temperature differences can be more significant. And Key did a little test to make sure that it makes a difference. So it's a difficult thing to test unless like you know exactly when you add the two different versions and you're testing in the same conditions and everything. So, but what he did is that he's from Chicago and he often goes to Michigan, to his home state, to visit family. And a trip from his place in Chicago to the St. Joseph Michigan supercharger, he knows that in similar condition, the supercharger will always showing him about 50% state of charge or 50% use of the battery pack to get there. So if he was 100% state of charge, it would show him 50% at destination. So he redid the test this week on a cold day to have like similar data. And it shows that instead of the 50%, it's showing a 63% use. So if you were 100% state of charge, or 37% from full charge. So a 13 point difference here from apparently from that changes that Tesla did to the software algorithm. And he believed that's more accurate for his actual experience of doing the drive. So that's the most important news here. It's actually more accurate. So I think Tesla is definitely going the right direction here, but I'd like for them to use like live weather data and everything from a planned route. So and I think that's coming at some point. Keith even had the suggestion that's pretty good to if you can get data from another Tesla that used the same route recently, like very very recently, then you could use the energy usage of that route and maybe not you cannot entirely account for that because it could have different driving experience, different driving styles. Different climate control use and things like that, but you can maybe use that as a percentage that can affect your predicted energy usage.
Yeah, and if you've taken the same route over and over again, it should use your past history as well.
Exactly, but then account for live weather data if the weather is different, or weather condition is different. So yeah. that's the most important thing, and. What I took out of working with that article a lot and talking to Tesla about it is that they take that very seriously and they're putting a lot of effort in it, which is great. And I hope that other automakers are doing that too, because I think after a very extensive charging infrastructure, I think that's the most important thing to eliminate range anxiety. Because even if you have a lot of potential range capacity, like you have a huge battery pack, like let's say the Roadster, you have a 600 mile battery pack in it, That's awesome. So you shouldn't have range anxiety. But then you do set out on a road trip that takes more than 600 miles. The most important thing is that you know exactly the range of haul time that you're going to have, not just a bad estimate of it. So I think it makes all the difference. All right, moving on to Porsche. Porsche or Porsche. I hear American always pronouncing it Porsche, and I don't get it.
I try to be French.
But French, they call it Porsche. So. Wow. I don't know.
It's like an entree.
Yeah.
So Porsche is making a ton of these, right?
Or at least it sounds to that. It's a report coming out of Germany, so it's not entirely sure. But we did hear recently from Oliver Blum, who's the CEO of Porsche, that they were considering doubling the capacity of it. And now what we got is a report from the German magazine Automobile Hawk that they have greenlighted the production of 40,000 units per year. And that's a lot for Porsche. I mean, aside from like their SUVs, like the Cayenne and the Macan programs, it would be the biggest vehicle program for them. So bigger than the Panamera, which is their main sedan right now.
Yeah, and they said they were seeing like astronomical demand on the signups. So, you know, maybe that's an informed decision. I mean, it's an impressive car. And if you're a Porsche fan, like, why wouldn't you want one of these? It's a great car.
If you're a Porsche fan, but I also see, I'm seeing something that's reminiscent of like the early days of Tesla, like the pre-Model S days when the Model S was coming and you had a bunch of reservation holders. I'm seeing like a similar mentality from people about that. Like they are very hyped up about the vehicle. So, congrats on Porsche to actually recognizing that and reportedly preparing for higher production for it.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking on the Taycan, just a little bit more, we shout out to Jim Rogers here, Jim Roger Johansson, who's a big time Tesla owner in Norway and also a Taycan reservation holder. Again, Norway, they have a lot of demand for it there. They have over 3,000 reservation with deposit apparently. And the reservation holders have a lot of questions about the vehicle there. And so the Porsche Norway gathered the most frequently asked question and they asked them to, what's his name? Stefan Weback, who's the head of the Taycan program. So most of it was all things that we already knew about, but there are some other interesting details, specifically about the actual production car, which we should see in September. So far, we still only have seen the actual Mission E concept that became the Taycan, but that was unveiled back in 2015. So we knew that it's going to evolve into a production version. And we've seen a bunch of test mules, but they were highly camouflaged. They even had exhaust pipes. Not something really to count on.
That's weird.
Yeah, but way back, commented a little bit on the what the production version is going to be, and he said it's going to be very similar to the concept, but it's going to be, I'm quoting here, more suited to practical use and optimize the aerodynamics. He gave some example to better practical use. The suicide doors are going away. It's going to be conventional doors, which we anticipated. And he said that that's for safety and for lower weight. He said that there's not going to be the hitch option. That's a Norwegian. Like he wanted an hitch option on the sports sedan here. And he said no hitch option coming.
Wait, what option?
A hitch on the trailer hitch on the back. I mean, it's a sports sedan. I don't think what they were expecting, but the Norwegian, for some reason, they're big on that. Like they really wanted like the Model 3. They cannot wait for the Model 3 hitch, which is apparently coming according.
Maybe for bikes, it makes sense.
Yeah, maybe for bikes
or snowboards. I guess Norway skis.
Yeah, you don't want to fit that in your $100,000 Taycan. Winter package. A winter package is also going to come. So standard things like heating seats and rear seats too. A steering wheel, and he said that a heat pump going to be available as an option too. So He reiterated the 90 kilowatt hour battery packs. So that's something that they've been talking about since the Mission E-Concept has been unveiled. Apparently, it's going to make it all the way to production. So a 90 kilowatt hour battery pack. 22 kilowatt onboard charger. He also confirmed that. He didn't want to confirm the price. He only said that it's going to be between the Cayenne and the Panamera, which we've been hearing like around $85,000 to $90,000 base price for a while now, and that would also fit into that. But he also said that that version won't be available at first, so only the higher-end version is going to be available, which is something that basically all automakers have been doing with electric vehicles for a while now. Like the e-tron is the same, the Jaguar Pace has been the same, and Tesla with the Model 3 has been the same too. But yeah, that was all the news from Porsche. A little last one news Porsche this week before we go, though it's not that big of a deal. It was just like, it's fun, so we are including it. They are building a new factory for the Taycan next to their headquarters in where are they based? In Stuttgart, Zinfenhausen. Sorry to my German friend for mispronouncing that. They are building a factory just for the Taycan at the same location. And they say that they are quoting the facade of the new factory with a material that's able to absorb nitrogen dioxide. So they say that it's the equivalent of 10-3. So the facade of the factory is able to convert, to catalyze the, and absorb some pollutant and made it into water and nitrate just from the sunlight when there's low humidity, even when there's low humidity in the air. So,
which is convenient since the Volkswagen Group has put out so much nitrous oxide or whatever.
Yeah, that's why it's funny, because nitrogen dioxide is especially the gas they were cheating on with the diesel gate scandal. Their diesel, emission cheating device, were hiding the amount of nitrogen dioxide that they were putting in the air. But I mean. It's cute more than anything else, because they say it's the equivalent of 10 threes, like the whole facade of the factory. So they could have planted 10 threes in front of the factory and it would have made the same difference. So I figured
I don't think it's going to make a big difference in the world of pollution.
No. The Volvo Polestar 2, we've been talking about it for a while now, because apparently they're going to unveil it in the next week or so. And they released an image earlier this month. Now they release a second image of it, where we get a bird's eye view. So it's not great, but looks okay so far. So far, so good, we would say. Looks like a cool sedan.
Yeah, and you can kind of get a good sense of the dimensions there, and just kind of just like everything else, it's like a big sedan.
Yeah, it might be bigger than the midsize. Like they keep referencing the Model 3. They say that it's going to be a Model 3 competitor and everything. Might be, but just from that, you're right. It looks like a full-size sedan, not really like a midsize one.
Yeah, it does look big.
Looks like there's an hatch in the back, too. It's not like a little trunk, or maybe not. Like it's hard to tell from there. But the update this week was mostly about, they released a bunch of image of the user interface, because the big thing about the car that they are pushing right now is that it's going to be the first car to have what they call the Google Android HMI, which is some kind of in-car user interface that's completely powered by Google. So it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like a step above Android?
Yeah, Android Auto. It's a different animal entirely.
Okay.
For a couple reasons. One, you don't need a phone, so it has Android built in and it's got an internet connection. Two, it controls things that Android Auto can't connect, like, you know, the air conditioning or...
Yeah, that's a big deal, yeah.
And then, you know, it's also like it's built in, so it's kind of like a... you know, it has the ability to do other things going forward as automakers allow this platform to have more powers over the car. And, you know, mm-hmm. Google's obviously thinking about autonomy and ride sharing, and, you know, they have the whole Waymo thing. So this is kind of like Google's way into other automakers. And this is kind of why Google isn't making its own cars, because I think it thinks it can do much better in this way.
Much like they are doing their own phones, but Android is bigger on the other hardware than their own hardware right now.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal because, especially if you're coming from Tesla owners out there, when you go inside any other car now, like any non-Tesla car, the UI is just, it's so evident that it's several steps behind Tesla. And I would like to think that Google has a much better chance to be competitive at on that front than a company like Polestar or Volvo. So I think it's good news.
And we think Apple's probably doing something similar to this as well, you know, with their Titan project. But we haven't heard anything about it as of yet.
Yeah, they compete under Android Auto with Apple CarPlay, but not beyond that.
Right. So we haven't seen this from Apple, although we've heard things like luxury car makers are working with Apple. There's a big operation in Italy, things like that.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, we're going to move to some kind of electric motorcycle war competition that's brewing. That is interesting. We wanted to have Mike on the show, but we were too late last minute. Mike is, our electric motorcycle and scooter and everything expert. So we reported last week or the week before that Lightning is going to unveil. They've been teasing and they released some spec of a new electric motorcycle with a very specific price point and spec that is basically new for the market. That was about $13,000 base price, 150 miles per hour top speed, 150 miles of range, and DC fast charging capacity, all for starting at $13,000. So that's basically what that's going directly after Zero we were seeing at that point, because it's basically the starting price or mid price range of the Zero, but with the top spec of the Zero even further than the top spec. So then what happened this week is Zero fought back with a first of its kind electric motorcycle. All they did is release a new image and announce the upcoming unveiling and some of the specs too. Did they release some of the specs?
I don't think that there weren't any specs. It was mostly just the image, right?
Yeah, it was just the image, but I think Michael was basically speculating that following the release of Lightning's release, Zero is saying, hey, we're still in the game here, and we have something coming in that range too. And they say it's coming in the 25th, February 25th. And the thing is, Lightning was their unveiling. It was planned for March. So what happened later in the week is that Lightning open up basically the bike for reservation. So even though they think they're gonna be beaten to unveil the unveiling of the bike, right after Zero announced that they are revealing something which we expect is gonna be competitive with what Lightning is planning to unveil, they decided to open a reservation for the bike so that they can keep some mind share.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the bike, it's clearly a high performance. You know what we've seen; it's a very high performance. It looks like the battery pack is very big. I think Zero wants to be the top dog in the electric motorcycle.
It's already here, so they want to maintain the top dog.
Right, and they've got a competition coming from this side, and then they also have Harley coming down the pike. So
there's at a lot the much of higher hand, though, right?
Right, yeah, $30,000 for the
last 30. Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah,
almost the Model 3.
Yeah, and they have the China coming too. Like when we were in Milan last year, insane amount of electric motorcycle coming. They are looking to be homologated for the U.S. market, and it's not an easy thing to do. But I think those gonna put the most pressure on the Lightning and Zero, but not ready to relinquish their top position in the U.S. market.
Nope.
All right, a quick weird news about Honda. Honda's EV plans have been very difficult to follow. They basically have nothing on the market aside from that clarity thing. But a few years back, they unveiled the retro-looking like urban EV, which was almost unanimously liked by people, I think. I liked it for sure. And they said that it was coming to production. It was coming to production in 2019. So that's this year. And what happened this week is that they announced that they're going to unveil a new electric prototype and that a mass production version of that electric prototype is going to come this year. So even though, and they say that it's linked to that retro looking prototype that they unveiled 2 years ago. So if you've been following, it sounds like they're going to unveil a new concept version of that previous vehicle and then release a production version later this year. All right, so that's my logic right now from what I'm listening from Honda. But then you look at they haven't unveiled the new concept yet. That's going to be in March at the Geneva Motor Show. But they did unveil just one image of it, and it looks nothing like the original looking concept from 2 years ago.
But not a lot.
Yeah, well, maybe the front end a little bit, but that's way more futuristic. There's no retro looking on that thing. It doesn't look retro at all, right? No. Looks way more futuristic. And also the shape of it is completely different. The shape is not like... I'd say that the shape of the original one was closer to the Mini Cooper.
Right.
This one is closer to the Smart. Right. That's not a good thing in my book. No. Not at all. So I don't know. And at this point, if you have to assume that this one is closer to the last one, it's closer to the production version than the last one, because, and forget about them changing things and actually making something closer to the retro looking one, because if it's coming out this year, then all the designs are already locked in, which is why it's weird that they're going to unveil a new concept before the production version, even though for sure the production version concept, production version design is locked in if we are months away from production, right?
Sounds like something's lost in translation there. That doesn't make any sense.
It sounds like it doesn't make sense, but wouldn't it be the first time that we've seen an automaker do that, like launch
right.
different, like BMW does it all the time. They can reveal three different concepts for one production car that they're gonna release. So yeah. It's not completely out of ordinary. But I mean, I'm disappointed if that's really what's going on here, because I really like the original one. This new one is not doing it for me at all. The only thing I like about this is that they are talking about a mass production version of the car. So sounds like they're gonna release their first like serious EV, because everything else that they released in the past were like what do you call it, compliance car. Like they were gas powered car version that were converted to electric, like the Honda right. Fit. The
Fit pretty EV. Much the worst possible cars too. Like the Clarity is
yeah,
but ugly.
But ugly, and the Honda Fit was like a very not like cheapest very much car. A gas powered yeah. cars converted.
Yep.
So let's see. We're gonna have a better idea in March, but even then, I'm not sure we're gonna have a better idea in March, because you're just gonna unveil in full that car that we're already seeing now, which doesn't.
Yeah, but we're only looking at it from the front. I mean, maybe there's better. You're not optimistic.
I'm doing some projection in my head, like something I can see it in 3D like right now, and I don't like what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly like the other one better, but I don't know. Maybe they have something up their sleeve, I guess.
Let's stay optimist. One cool thing that came up this week, at Petro-Canada, they are testing their own EV fast charging station, and looks good.
It's fast. It's not like the base model. It looks like they actually want to help people instead of just lip service. The CCS is at 200 kilowatts, which you could almost drive your Jaguar over there and get a fast charge there that you couldn't get on the and then also they have Chatamo at 100 kilowatts, which I think the only car that does that currently is the Hyundai Soul EV, and that's really just the like 70 kilowatts, and then obviously the new Leaf also is 70 kilowatts with a peak of 100.
So they are future-proof, basically. Those stations are future-proof. And they are for new cars coming to market in the next few years. And it's nice, because it's the first time they're doing that, the first time that they are releasing. I've seen them doing deal with Petro-Canada. Petro-Canada, by the way, if you don't know, used to be a state-owned company here in Canada, but we screwed up really bad and we sold it. And since then, it's been growing like crazy and making a ton of money. And now it's owned by Suncor. And they are
back when you were a communist state. It was state-owned?
It was state-owned. We did some bad deals with state-owned company in Canada, selling Petro-Canada, selling CN. And you look at them now, you're not happy. But anyway, I think now it's probably the biggest gas retailer in Canada. I'm not 100% sure on that, but if not, it's out there. And I've seen them have a third-party charging station at gas station, but this one is the first that it's their own system owned by them. And not only looks good, like you said, the charging it looks fast too. And right now they are testing it. It's even free to charge, apparently. If you go there right now, you can just plug in and charge. They are like seeking feedback about the user experience and everything. I mean, if you're making it free, the user experience is pretty okay. I'm not sure it's really representative of the final state of the user experience. But
Yeah, like 98% of the problems of charging is like getting the payment sorted out.
Getting the payment for sure. But also the fact that they're starting with those stations and that kind of charge rate is great, because you look even at the Electrify America, which is all about the faster, ultra fast charging speed. But then we ended up at the Torrance one, and it's not even one of those ultra fast. They want it to just be a neighborhood system at 50 kilowatts, which I don't think makes a ton of sense, because like you can just go level two if it's a neighborhood system anyway. And it's not like where there's a bunch of high rises and everything. It's a residential area. Those ones, they are starting out with those 100 plus kilowatt station, while other companies are still deploying those 50 kilowatts ones. So I think that's great news. And if you have a car that's limited to 50 kilowatts, you can still plug that too. So I think it's a cool latest example of some oil companies that are really looking into getting into the charging world.
Yeah, but like I have to say, I don't think they're going to make up their losses with charging because most people charge at home. So this is only people who are going on long trips, and while it'll make up some of the loss, maybe they're making. I mean, the oil companies make all the money. The gas stations are mostly just breaking even and making money on the stuff they sell inside. So that won't change, I guess. But it's not
That's
going to make up the
interesting,
loss.
man. Next news, Toyota and Panasonic confirm some kind of wide-ranging battery partnership for electric vehicles. Very interesting move here. They're talking about a new venture, a new joint venture between the two companies, something that's basically dedicating current battery production capacity from Panasonic to this new joint venture that's gonna not only supply Toyota's effort to create electric vehicles, which is still, of course, very limited, but also other automakers, including automakers inside the Toyota brand like Subaru and Mazda and who else?
I thought Panasonic was Tesla's best buddy.
It is.
What's
So that's why it's interesting, because
I
it's,
mean,
go ahead.
they might share technology that, like maybe Tesla has some proprietary information that went into the Gigafactory, and Panasonic can take that away and build a Gigafactory with Toyota or something. I'm
Yeah, that's
truly,
definitely a valid concern. But
I
something to keep
mean.
in mind, though, is that they are focusing on prismatic cells.
Right, that's different than the 21. What are they? 21
70.
70s, or the 18650s.
Yeah, so it's not the same cells, though the chemistry can be very similar. So, yeah, I think it's a valid concern for sure. It's a weird move. The move seems to be limited to like the Asian market, though. They're talking about Japan. They're talking about China. Of course, those two companies are Japanese. Interesting move for sure. That's pretty much it for us this week. Did you see
I
any
made it.
question? Yeah, you made it through the whole show. Do you see any
Almost.
question in the YouTube channel? I
I'm
couldn't
looking.
watch the. I couldn't watch it YouTube.
Two radars. Not really.
No.
Mostly just commentary on our commentary. I should keep a closer eye on this.
They comment on our comments. All right, so thanks a lot for listening, guys. We're going to be releasing our BMW i8 Roadster review soon. That's both, of course, my written review and going to be a video on this same YouTube channel. That's going to come at the same time. That's going to be either later today or tomorrow, probably tomorrow. What else? Oh, we're going to Tesla Corsa here in Southern California. Is it Southern California? It's almost
middle.
Yeah, Middle California. It's Bottom Willow, I think it's called, the racetrack in Bottom Willow. So we're going to that Sunday. So if any of you is going and you see us, just stop by and say hi. The registration are complete for the car if you want to actually race your car on the track, but you can still attend and view the people competing on the walk. I don't think it's a competition, but it's more about like just testing your own Tesla's power and performance on the track. So that could be fun just to watch too. I'm probably just going to be watching anyway, so because I don't have a car. I don't have a Tesla here.
Maybe you can race Jamie's.
Yeah, I'm not sure we'd be completely comfortable with that. Even Jamie was already worried because we're going with our contributor here, Jameson Dow, who has both a Roadster and a Model 3. But we were looking at the actual distance there, and his Roadster doesn't have the fast charging upgrade, so making it all the way to Bottom Willow and then competing and then coming back. Unfortunately, the charging wouldn't be great, and since you don't have access to the supercharger with a Roadster. So instead, we'll be going with the Model 3, and his Model 3 is a rear drive one. So he was already worried about what would do to his brakes. So, I'll let him burn his own brakes and not myself, I think.
It's a fair concern.
Yeah. All right. So thanks a lot for listening, and we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Bye-bye.